Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for August 6, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, lawmakers have introduced legislation to create regional petroleum gas reserves. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on a University of Illinois study that found a size-price relationship in farmland sales. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter September wheat settled at 656 and a quarter, up 13 and a half. December, 668 and three quarters, up 12 and three quarters. Soft September, 568, up 15 and a half. December, 586 and three quarters, up 14. September corn settled at 363 and a quarter, up 7. December, 374 and a quarter, up 7. March, 387, up 7. July, 401 and three quarters, up 6 and a half. August soybeans settled at 1237, up 14 and a quarter. September, 1096 and a half, up 15. November, 1080, up 14 and one quarter. August soybean meal settled at 388 even, up 580. September, 361, up 530. August soybean oil settled at 3579, up 32. September, 3586, up 29. August live cattle, last trade here, 158.37 and a half, down 7 and a half. August feeders, 221.25 unchanged. And August lean hogs, 116.50, and they are up 65. And those are today's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that the theme to the two-week outlook has not changed since Tuesday, although a little less rain is advertised for parts of the eastern Corn Belt during the next week. The driest parts of the Midwest, which extend from the southwestern Corn Belt into southern Illinois and western Kentucky, will benefit from significant rain during the next few days, with follow-up showers continuing through the remainder of the next 2 weeks. Areas from North Dakota to Wisconsin and Ohio will be disfavored for significant rain during the next week, but with favorable soil moisture in place today and an increase in rain expected August 13th through the 20th, those areas should continue to see favorable conditions for crops.
Support for this market report comes from Country Financial, providing generations of Central Illinois farmers with crop hail insurance programs for individual producers, immediate family member, or tenant-landlord relationships. More information is available from your local Country Financial representative or at country-crop.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It does appear very much on this trading day that it was wheat that did the heavy lifting.
It was wheat early on, and we had talked about that with the NATO announcement of more troops being amassed by Russia, but then we got additional news pretty much right after we got off the air of the talk by Putin and Russia announcing an agricultural import ban and limits for 1 year against countries who have sanctioned Russia. So this stimulated in the trade. I talked to Chicago right after this news came out and said, what's your take on it? And I think it stimulated talk in the trade of trade war and also retaliation. And I think this is starting to move the end users maybe a little bit, Dave, from a hand-to-mouth, just-in-time buying mindset to getting a little bit more end-user coverage because of the uncertainty of that supply. And I think, and when you add that to the noontime weather models splitting up and the GFS pushing the rain south, similar to what Drew Lerner's forecast was that you just gave, and that the rains coming out of Missouri tomorrow don't make it into a lot of eastern Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, the trade, I think, started to think about how important this rain was because of the high, high record-type crop expectations for production that we have and essentially priced in heading into next week's report. So when WGN's Tom Skilling came in and went with that drier bias, I felt like I could see quite a correlation there with the prices that the corn wanted to move up towards the high end of the trading range. So wheat started us off, and the Bloomberg Commodity Grain Index gave us its first best buy signal technically since February, but corn certainly helped stimulate that buy signal as well.
We'll get to more of the grains in just a second, but I want to touch on this trade war between the U.S. and Russia that Russia escalated today. To what degree does it impact lean hogs, and what does that mean to the U.S.?
Well, it would impact the hogs the most from the data that I've been able to pull off in the short period of time since this happened from the FAS website. It's not a big deal to the poultry side because we're only trading about, year-to-date, 111,000 metric tons with Russian poultry exports. And, to date, we're down about 17%. And this is 111,000 tons of chicken leg quarters, which is the vast majority of what we send them. But if you look at total broiler meat, Dave, we're way, way down. For instance, in 2009 and 2010, mm-hmm. 2009, we shipped them about 750,000 tons of broiler meat exports, and so we're way, way down compared to where we have been the last 5 years when it comes to broiler meat. But when you look at the pork side of the equation, even there, we are up 285% year-to-date, but even there, you're only talking about 60,000 metric tons. And here again, back in 2009, even as recently as 2012, we were shipping them 255,000 metric tons. So as I see, I haven't looked at the beef very much, but as I see the pork and poultry, this is not a huge negative net supply pushback into the domestic markets that it could have been 3 or 4 years ago.
All right, let's turn our attention then to the grains, and let's go ahead and begin on the soybean side where, let's be honest, the way the futures have been trading lately, you might as well just call it a Duncan yo-yo. Last week down, Monday up, Tuesday down, Wednesday up.
Yeah, and if you look at the November bean chart, this type of trading range, and we've established essentially a flat trading range band ever since the July 4th holiday when we gapped lower. But if you take into consideration where we've been since, say, July 8th, the top of the range is about 1130. The bottom of the range is about 1055. And we just have been going back and forth for well over a month. And this makes sense because the trade is not sure of what the crop size is. We haven't been able to go through 1055, 1060 because the demand has remained very, very strong. But we're not sure how big the supply is. And I think this is where it goes back to what we talked about this morning. I'm more nervous about the beans leading us down another leg, because the supply would be more assured if the rains come. But, you know, we have to be blunt about this at this stage of the game, Dave. The vast majority of the rain, and I know what the 10-day forecast was that you just read, mm-hmm. but about 80 to 90% of the rainfall for the next 7 days is supposed to come in the next 36 hours. So when I looked at the crop conditions versus my crop tour that I took this past weekend, I really have to wonder whether we have a record-breaking crop on our hands if we miss these rains in eastern Illinois, most of Indiana, and Ohio. So I think the trade may start to see it that way as well. And at the end of the day, if the rains don't come, you may have a trade that is sitting there saying, well, is the August report almost a moot point and in the rearview mirror, and how do we trade this? So I think there's going to be a lot of consternation if these rains are missed by the bears in the market because of how much we've built up this production and taken these prices down. So beans are the pivot point. Beans are the leverage to whether we go up another leg or down another leg, in my view at least.
And in particular, I would think that if we were to clear 1087 with force, that might be a key that maybe we have put the bears aside for a while.
I think that would do a lot, especially when it comes to the weekly chart. As I said, I would be very happy if we could clear the gap from the July 4th holiday and get back up above the 40-day moving average of around 1137, 1138. That has always seemed to be between 1135 and 1145. That's always seemed to be in the last 10 or 11 months a very key pivot point that would turn the trade from a bearish trend to a bullish trend again.
Meanwhile, over the corn, we saw a little bit of a pop today.
Yeah, and I think this is where the corn came on with the wheat. I think we have to go back and remember back from January, February, when the Ukraine was back in the news, that it really wasn't about the wheat market. It really is about the corn market. They are the number three exporter in the world. They really do dominate the European and Near East trade. And so if you're looking for a bullish reason to buy corn or a bullish reason to buy the Ukraine, it would probably be more in the corn than in the wheat. And I would also say that when you look at history and look at what's happened over in that part of the country, I continue to feel like I did back in January, February, the biggest likelihood, the most likely scenario to play out is not that the EU slaps counter sanctions on Russia, but I think it's that Russia probably does invade Ukraine, takes it, and then messes with Black Sea transportation and grain movement. That's where you cut your supplies off when it comes to the Black Sea grain getting out into the world demand market, and that improves the likelihood of U.S. grain being much more needed by the world. So I think that's more of a likely scenario based upon history, but how the Europeans deal with dictators and how the dictators in that part of the world usually try and go after strategic logistic places like the Black Sea.
Any chance that we come back when we talk on Friday, see missed rains, short covering, and with the report ahead in the long weekend, a potential assault on something like 387?
Well, as I said, I think that you've got a situation in your market technically where that commodity index, the Bloomberg Grain Commodity Index, has been trying to bottom for 2 weeks, and to be able to close above that 20-day moving average. That's the best close since February, and it's the first time we've been able to close above it since early May. So you've got technicals on your side at this point in time. I would think that if you had fundamental strength and a feeding of the bull type mindset, then it's just a tough call because this August report is expected to be showing such a big crop. So does the trade want to go flatline here and try and soften it up before the report comes out, and then feel very confident about buying it or not? I think this is the perfect, if there is a perfect opportunity or a perfect scenario for bought puts, this to me would be it, given what we're dealing with, both weather and the Ukraine and the report coming up, because the puts have come down so much in value.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Have a great day, sir.
Mike Luzzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
In agricultural news, lawmakers have introduced legislation that would give the Secretary of Energy the responsibility of being the emergency coordinator should the U.S. find itself short on propane gas. Among other things, The proposal would provide for increased storage of propane in regional reserves. The plan would also expand the list of equipment covered under USDA's Storage Facility Loan Program to include propane tanks. In response to a petition from U.S. sugar producers, the U.S. Department of Commerce is investigating dumping and countervailing duty charges against Mexico filed by the American Sugar Coalition and its individual members. Rulings are expected by late this month or early September. Meanwhile, there are reports that parties representing U.S. sugar producers are in discussions with Mexican government and sugar industry officials that could lead to an agreement to manage sugar trade and production in both countries. But a bipartisan group of senators have written a letter to the Secretary of Commerce to oppose any new sugar deal with Mexico, since such an agreement to settle current trade cases would violate the U.S. commitment to free trade with that country. The group argues in its letter that any managed trade agreement between the U.S. and Mexico, including a suspension agreement or other mechanism, will cost American jobs, hurt consumers, and encourage retaliatory trade actions to the detriment of the U.S. and Mexico. The drinking water crisis in one of Ohio's largest cities is drawing attention to a new requirement for farmers in the state, a license to fertilize. The certification is the biggest step Ohio has taken to control nutrient runoff from farms. Regulators say the new licenses that become mandatory in 2017 will require farmers to take a one-day class. They say it will help cut fertilizer use by showing farmers how they can apply less nutrients without negatively affecting their crop yields. The law also allows regulators to revoke such certifications if problems are found on a farm. The Commerce Department today says that the U.S. trade deficit fell in June to its lowest level since January, as imports dropped sharply, led by lower shipments of cell phones, petroleum, and cars. The trade deficit fell 7% in June to a seasonally adjusted $41.5 billion from $44.7 billion in May. Exports rose 0.1% to $195.9 billion, a record high. Imports fell 1.2%, the most in a year, to $237.4 billion. Imports of petroleum products fell 3.3% in June, cutting the trade deficit in petroleum to its lowest level in 4 years. South Korea today detailed new taxes on large corporate cash reserves as it tries to prod businesses to use excess funds for wages and dividends to boost economic growth. For next year, companies with paid-in capital exceeding $48.4 million will have to pay a 10% tax on their total cash reserves for 3 years if they don't meet one of two targets: spend 60 to 80% of income on investments, salaries, and dividends, or use 20 to 40% of profit for salaries and dividends. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. A study of farmland sales from the University of Illinois points to a size-price relationship. Todd Gleason has more.
From 1979 to 2011, the average Illinois farmland transfer size grew from 53.7 acres to 68.9 acres. That's an increase of 28.2%. USDA data show that from 78 to 2012, the average Illinois farm operation size grew from 270 acres to 350 acres, an increase of about 33%. Though not directly correlated to the extent that some farm sales are whole operations, the increase in transferred parcel size may simply follow the natural change in operation size. Transfers of 40 to 80 acres have historically been very common in the state of Illinois farmland market, a pattern that is unchanged in recent years. Sales of 20 to 40 acres and sales of 80 to 160 acres are also relatively common. In fact, in every year since 1979, at least 75% of the Illinois farmland transfers were between 20 and 160 acres. There is, however, a marked downturn in small or 10 to 20 acre farmland transfers from 1979 to 2011. Transfers of 10 to 20 acres decreased from 20.3% of all Illinois farmland transfers in 1979 to 14.4% of all transfers in 2011. That's nearly a 31% decrease. On the other hand, sales of 160 to 320 acre plots were 162.6% more common in 2011 than in 1979. So what's the point? Well, parcel size has been shown to have an important relationship to farmland sale price. The small plots, by the way, tend to sell at greater per-acre prices than their larger counterparts. It's unclear if this is due to potential conversion of use potential or reduced financial constraints that accompany small farmland parcels. The size-price relationship for farmland transfers varies considerably by region as well, with proximity to population in particular. In the Northeast and the Southwest regions, near Chicago and St. Louis respectively, 10 to 20 acre parcels sell for nearly 50% more than other sales. Much smaller premiums exist in more rural regions where farmland buyers face less competition from buyers outside of agriculture. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Scott Butcher of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Condition of the crop your way, sir?
Things are really good. We've actually caught some rains in the last 2 to 3 weeks here where, you know, we've had a little bit warmer weather, but, you know, certainly nothing real sweltering. We've had some rains in that time period that have helped things and kept things maturing, I guess, the way you would like for them to be.
Lots of speculation that basis is going to widen out further. Already is widened out a lot in the West. But I wonder if there might be some basis that might be picked up early in the harvest on the ideas that there might not be enough old crop corn to get you there, and new crop corn might be kept in the fields a little bit longer because it's so wet.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we're, you know, starting to feel now is that we are, you know, certainly going to have a wetter crop that's going to be harder to dry down and, you know, going to take a little bit, you know, take a little bit for it to be ready. If that's the case, if we have to drag out old crop, you know, how much corn do we have left and, you know, do we have enough to get us there? Certainly feels like today we do. We've got enough corn left out in the countryside and in the commercial elevators. That we're going to be okay, you know, today, I would say.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices today then, please?
Cash corn right now, we are $3.57. Soybeans, $12.40.
Thank you very much, Scott. You have a good day now.
You too.
That's Scott Butcher of the Andersons, and he is in Clymers, Indiana. In about 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Have you had a chance to try this website yet? WILLAG.org. And I ask because on it you will find a link to subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter full of fundamentals and technicals about the marketplace. It's in the right navigation window. It's free. You can click on WILL.AG.org and you can subscribe. It's National Root Beer Float Day. By the way, commercial root beer was developed by Charles Elmer Hyers in 1866. His choice of a name for his root tea powder drink was not without controversy. The word beer drew the wrath of the temperance movement. Hyers was quick to respond. He sent samples to a lab which concluded that root beer contained less alcohol than bread. On this day in agricultural history in 1838, George Simmons was born. A British meteorologist, he posed higher standards of accuracy and uniformity on meteorological measurements, and he was responsible for the United Kingdom increasing the number of reporting stations from 350 to 3,500.
In 1911, Lucille Ball was born on a farm in Jamestown, New York. Later, her husband, Desi Arnaz, became owner of a horse farm. By the way, one episode of I Love Lucy had the redhead deciding to earn some extra spending money by going into the chicken farming business. And in 1954, David Fairchild died, an American botanist and agriculturalist. He was responsible for introducing over 20,000 exotic plants and varieties of established crops into the U.S., including soya beans, mangoes, alfalfa, and flowering cherries. In 1896, he set up a small plant introduction garden on a six-acre plot near Miami, Florida. Fairchild also managed the Foreign Seed and Plant Introduction Program for USDA for more than two decades. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Seems as though in the last 24 hours, a little bit of rain moisture has been taken out of the forecast.
Well, maybe a little bit, but I don't know that I would worry tremendously about that. The bottom line is we still get rain in most of the Midwest over these next 2 weeks. And most importantly, first, is the significant rain that will fall in the western Corn Belt and all of the areas that have been drier-biased in the past few weeks, which would include the region from Nebraska and parts of Iowa into Kansas, Missouri, western and southern Illinois, and western Kentucky. And all of these areas should get easily 1 or 2 inches of rain, and probably 1 to 3 is more likely. The eastern Midwest at the same time will probably not see nearly as much rain. Indiana, Ohio, and portions of Michigan probably will just see some light amounts. And net drying may occur, but those areas have better subsoil moisture than the areas that are in the western Corn Belt. And so crop development will continue to move along at a swift pace, even without the rain. Now, we do expect some colder air to come into the eastern Midwest as we get to the second half of next week into the following weekend, and there should be a really good chance for some more rain to fall as the colder air comes into the region. So if I'm correct on all this, I think over the two-week period, we will get rain everywhere, and the crop conditions will stay ideal.
One state you didn't mention was Minnesota.
Minnesota will not be involved with the heavier rains. They will see some lighter showers and thunderstorms periodically over the 2 weeks, but they will not have a problem with moisture shortages like these other areas in the west, central, and southwestern parts of the Corn Belt. They're doing all right, and they're going to get enough precipitation to hang in there as well.
And then does the bias turn to warmer temperatures?
When we get to the latter part of August, I think we will see somewhat a return to more seasonable and possibly some warmer temperatures relative to normal. And as we start to warm back up, of course, we'll increase the evaporation rates, and so we'll start working down the moisture in the soil again. But by that point in time, a lot of these crops will have really moved along very well in their development. And all we'll need is some timely scattered showers of light intensity in order to sustain the good crop conditions that will have been prevailing up to that point. And I think we will get it. I don't see anything coming along that's just going to stop the rain and crank our temperatures so high that the crops can't stay caught up. So I think it's going to be a good finish. The big question is frost and freeze potentials, and that's something we'll debate for a while.
Where are we on growing degree days?
Well, it looks like the majority of the Midwest is still running a little short on those, especially the northern parts of the region, and that's where we need to see the heat units most significantly. I think the lower parts of the Midwest and certainly the southwest part of the Corn Belt are in fine shape. There's been plenty of degree day accumulations across those areas, but some of the upper Midwest from the Dakotas into parts of Wisconsin do still need to see some significant heat in order to accelerate this crop along to avoid those potentially damaging frost freezes that may come in September.
Thank you much.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.